Chapter 43, Manly Prudence. Not the height, it is the declivity that is terrible. The declivity where the gaze shoots downwards and the hand grasp upwards. There does the heart become giddy through its double will. Ah, friends, do you divine also my heart's double will? This is my declivity and my danger, that my gaze shoots towards the summit, and my hand would fain clutch and lean on the depth. To man clings my will. With chains do I bind myself to man, because I am pulled upwards to the Superman. For here does mine other will tend. And therefore do I live blindly among men, as if I knew them not, that my hand may not entirely lose belief and firmness. I know not you men. This gloom and conciliation is often spread around me. I sit at the gateway for every rogue, and ask, who wishes to deceive me? This is my first manly prudence, that I allow myself to be deceived, so as not to be on my guard against deceivers. Ah, if I were on my guard against man, how could man be an anchor to my ball? Too easily would I be pulled upwards and away. This providence is over my fate, that I have to be without foresight. And he who would not languish among men must learn to drink out of all glasses. And he who would keep clean among men must know how to wash himself even with dirty water. And thus spoke I often to myself for conciliation. Courage, cheer up, old heart. An unhappiness has failed to befall you. Enjoy that as your happiness. This, however, is mine other manly prudence. I am more forbearing to the vain than to the proud. Is not wounded vanity the mother of all tragedies? Where, however, pride is wounded, there grows up something better than pride. That life may be fair to behold, its game must be well played. For that purpose, however, it needs good actors. Good actors have I found all the vain ones. They play and wish people to be fond of beholding them. All their spirit is in this wish. They represent themselves, they invent themselves. In the neighborhood I like to look upon life, it cures of melancholy. Therefore am I forbearing to the vain, because they are the physicians of my melancholy and keep me attached to man as to a drama. And further, who conceives the full depth of the modesty of the vain man? I am favorable to him and sympathetic on account of his modesty. From you would he learn his belief in himself. He feeds upon your glances. He eats praise out of your hands. Your lies does he even believe when you lie favorably about him. For in its depth sighs his heart, where am I? And if that be the true virtue which is unconscious of itself, well, the vain man is unconscious of his modesty. This is, however, my third manly prudence. I am not put out of conceit with the wicked by your timorousness. I am happy to see the marvels the warm sun hatches, tigers and palms and rattlesnakes. Also among men, there is a beautiful brood of the warm sun, and much that is marvelous in the wicked. In truth, as your wisest did not seem to me so very wise, so found I also human wickedness below the fame of it. And oft did I ask with a shake of the head, why still rattle you rattlesnakes? Verily, there is still a future even for evil, and the warmest south is still undiscovered by man. How many things are now called the worst wickedness, which are only 12 feet broad and 3 months long? Some day, however, will greater dragons come into the world. For that, the Superman may not lack his dragon, the super dragon that is worthy of him. There must still much warm sun glow on moist virgin forests. Out of your wild cats must tigers have evolved, and out of your poison toads, crocodiles, for the good hunter shall have a good hunt. And verily, you good and just, in you there is much to be laughed at, and especially your fear of what has hitherto been called the devil. So alien are you in your souls to what is great, that to you the Superman would be frightful in his goodness. And you wise and knowing ones, you would flee from the solar glow of the wisdom in which the Superman joyfully bathes his nakedness. You highest men who have come within my ken, this is my doubt of you and my secret laughter, I suspect you would call my Superman a devil. Ah, I became tired of those highest and best ones. From their height did I long to be up, out, and away to the Superman. A horror came over me when I saw those best ones naked. Then there grew for me the pinions to soar away into distant futures. Into more distant futures, into more southern souths than ever artist dreamed of. Here, where gods are ashamed of all clothes. But disguised do I want to see you, you neighbors and fellow men, and well attired and vain and estimable as the good and just. And disguised will I myself sit among you, that I may mistake you and myself. That is my last manly prudence. Thus spoke Zarathustra. Chapter 44. The Stillest Hour. What has happened to me, my friends? You see me troubled, driven forth, unwillingly obedient, ready to go, alas, to go away from you. Yea, once more must Zarathustra retire to his solitude, but unjoyously this time does the bear go back to his cave. What has happened to me? Who ordered this? Ah, mine angry mistress wishes it so. She spoke to me. Have I ever named her name to you? Yesterday, towards evening, there spoke to me my stillest hour. That is the name of my terrible mistress. And thus did it happen, for everything must I tell you, that your heart may not harden against the suddenly departing one. Do you know the terror of him who falls asleep? To the very toes he is terrified, because the ground gives way under him, and the dream begins. Thus do I speak to you in parable. Yesterday, at the stillest hour, did the ground give way under me. The dream began. The hour hand moved on. The timepiece of my life drew breath. Never did I hear such stillness around me, so that my heart was terrified. Then was there spoken to me without voice, "You know it, Zarathustra." And I cried in terror at this whispering, and the blood left my face, but I was silent. Then was there once more spoken to me without voice, "You know it, Zarathustra, but you do not speak it." And at last I answered like one defiant, "Yea, I know it, but I will not speak it." Then was there again spoken to me without vice, "You will not, Zarathustra, is this true? Conceal yourself not behind your defiance." And I wept and trembled like a child and said, "Ah, I would indeed, but how can I do it? Exempt me only from this. It is beyond my power." Then there was again spoken to me without voice, "What matter about yourself, Zarathustra? Speak your word and succumb." And I answered, "Ah, it is my word. Who am I? I await the worthier one. I am not worthy even to succumb by it." Then was there again spoken to me without voice, "What matter about yourself? You are not yet humble enough for me. Humility has the hardest skin." And I answered, "What has not the skin of my humility endured? At the foot of my height do I dwell. How high are my summits? No one has yet told me. But well do I know my valleys." Then there was again spoken to me without voice, "O Zarathustra, he who has removed mountains removes also valleys and plains." And I answered, "As yet has my word not removed mountains, and what I have spoken has not reached man. I went indeed to men, but not yet have I attained to them." Then was there again spoken to me without voice, "What know you thereof? The dew falls on the grass when the night is most silent." And I answered, "They mocked me when I found and walked in mine own path, and certainly did my feet then tremble." And thus did they speak to me, "You forgot the path before, now do you also forget how to walk?" Then was there again spoken to me without voice, "What matter about their mockery? You are one who has unlearned to obey, now shall you command. Know you not who is most needed by all? He who commands great things. To execute great things is difficult. The more difficult task is to command great things. This is your most unpardonable obstinacy. You have the power, and you will not rule." And I answered, "I lack the lion's voice for all commanding." Then was there again spoken to me as a whispering, It is the stillest words which bring the storm. Thoughts that come with dove's footsteps guide the world. O Zarathustra, you shall go as a shadow of that which is to come. Thus will you command, and in commanding go foremost. And I answered, I am ashamed. Then was there again spoken to me without voice, You must yet become a child, and be without shame. The pride of youth is still upon you. Late have you become young. But he who would become a child must surmount even his youth. And I considered a long while and trembled. At last, however, did I say what I had said at first, I will not. Then did a laughing take place all around me. Alas, how that laughing lacerated my bowels and cut into my heart. And there was spoken to me for the last time, O Zarathustra, your fruits are ripe, but you are not ripe for your fruits. So must you go again into solitude, for you shall yet become mellow. And again there was a laughing, and it fled. Then did it become still around me, as with a double stillness. I lay, however, on the ground, and the sweat flowed from my limbs. Now have you heard all, and why I have to return into my solitude. Nothing have I kept hidden from you, my friends. But even this have you heard from me, who is still most reserved of men, and will be so. Ah, my friends, I should have something more to say to you. I should have something more to give you. Why do I not give it? Am I then a niggard? When, however, Zarathustra had spoken these words, the violence of his pain and a sense of the nearness of his departure from his friends came over him, so that he wept aloud, and no one knew how to console him. In the night, however, he went away alone and left his friends.